From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
It may be the so-called garden off-season in many zones of the United States, but I'm not sure anyone told the ticks that. Ticks and how those of us who spend time outdoors can avoid potentially harmful effects of contact with them are a subject I'm asked a lot about and have a lot of questions about myself. I invited a leading tick researcher for nearly 20 years, Dr. Nita Connolly of Western Connecticut State University, to help answer some of them today. In the fall of 2016, Dr. Connolly won a $1.6 million grant from the Centers for Disease Control to fund a four-year study in coordination with the University of Rhode Island to gauge the effectiveness of various tick control methods in the areas around people's homes. She'll tell us more about the angles being pursued and also about self-care topics from treated clothing to the use of topical repellents and more.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach made possible from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/AwayToGarden. From Timber Press, the leader in fine garden books, The World of Laura Ingalls Wilder by best-selling author Marta McDowell. The revealing exploration of Wilder's connection to the landscapes of the American frontier is a must-read for Little House on the Prairie fans. From booksellers everywhere.
Welcome, Dr. Nita Connolly, to A Way to Garden. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
So a little context first. You're in the Northeast, where a lot of the cases of Lyme, for example, in the United States occur. But there's multiple tick species around the nation and so forth. But you're really in like a hotbed state, you and the University of Rhode Island, yes?
Yes, we are. So the Northeast reports the majority of Lyme cases in the United States annually.
But there are, I was surprised to see how many species there are in different areas of the country. I mean, you know, because we're all very regional-centric, I guess. We only know what's around us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, depending on where you're located in the country, there's various species of ticks that will bite humans. And then there's a whole list of other ticks that tend to be very species-specific, that is, they only feed on particular animals.
Mm-hmm. Do all you tick researchers around the country have an annual convention and share data?
Well, sure. There's not an annual tick meeting per se, but there, in fact, we just had our National Entomology annual meeting, and there are many tick enthusiasts, you could say, at those meetings. Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the Integrated Tick Management, or ITM, study you're conducting that you received the CDC grant for, and kind of a little bit about how you devised the avenues of study and what you're in hoping to do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know that Lyme disease was, first described about 40 years ago now. And so since that time, there's been a lot of research aimed at how we could reduce, you know, human exposure to the black-legged tick, that is the tick that transmits Lyme disease, to humans. And we know now that this tick, it is the black-legged tick. Many people also know it as the deer tick. Mm-hmm. Not only transmits the agent of Lyme disease, but it also transmits four other human disease-causing agents in the northeastern United States. So it transmits Lyme. It transmits the agent of babesiosis, which is a malaria-like disease. It transmits the agent of human anaplasmosis, Powassan encephalitis virus, and then a newly described bacterial disease that's caused by a bacteria known as Borrelia miyamotoi. So we know that this one tick actually is capable of transmitting a lot of different disease-causing agents. And so there's been a lot of research at preventing or aimed at reducing, you know, backyard ticks and reducing our exposures to ticks. And still, you know, 40 years later, we're still, you know, dealing with the problem of Lyme disease and now these new emerging infections. And we're still not great at preventing disease. And so we now are realizing, after a lot of research, that, you know, just killing the tick or just avoiding the tick is not enough if we don't really understand what's going on with human behavior too. And so more of the more current studies aimed at Lyme disease prevention look at not only the tick in the environment, but also how humans interact with the environment. And so the Backyard Integrated Tick Management Study is the study that you're referring to, which is the Centers for Disease Control funded study. And this study is actually, it's a cooperative agreement, which means that we collaborate with the CDC. And we also have our study partners at the University of Rhode Island, who with Dr. Tom Mather, who runs the Tick Encounter Resource Center and the Center for Vector-Borne Disease there at URI. And so we're all working collaboratively to implement a backyard tick study, because we know that in the northeastern United States, most people who are exposed to the black-legged tick that causes them to get sick are most likely exposed in their own backyards. And we find that people tend to take a lot of precautions when they go out, you know, hiking or,
yes,
or camping.
Yes.
But maybe they're not as diligent, right, about doing those practices,
yes,
in their own backyards. But we know that backyards are, you know, can often be, you know, a great habitat for the tick that causes Lyme and these other infections. And particularly, these are backyards that have an edge that is brushy or forested.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like here in Connecticut, much of the state is really chopped up into these sort of suburban settings where, you know, homes are, you know, in the woods. You know,
mm-hmm,
we have these nice little private, you know, yards, and we have, you know, maybe three sides of the backyard might be adjacent to a deciduous forest.
So these are creatures that like some leaf litter, don't they?
They love leaf litter, yep.
Yeah.
So when you have ticks, when you have a forest edge, you have a lot of dead leaves on the ground. And these ticks, they need a very high humidity to survive, and so they love to hunker down under that leaf litter.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find a lot of ticks in the backyard landscape, right, at that wooded edge and into the woods, but also migrating in from that wooded edge into the lawn area as well. And so we really have been focusing our efforts at how we can not only reduce ticks in the backyard, but how we can also reduce human exposures to ticks in the backyard.
So what are you testing? What are some of the parts of the study? Are you spraying or are you putting out, I've read about bait boxes. What
yeah,
are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, we did work on a spray study in 2011 and 2012. This is in three states. We worked with the CDC and health departments in Connecticut and New York and in Maryland to implement just a spray study where we enrolled all these households into this, you know, placebo-controlled study where some got spray and some got water, and then we followed the people in the households to see who, you know, how many of them got sick or had a tick bite. And unfortunately, we were able to reduce the number of ticks by applying a single springtime yard spray. That's an application of pesticide around the perimeter where lawn meets woods. We were able to reduce the ticks fairly well, but we were unable to actually show that it reduced human disease. And so in this new study, the Integrated Tick Management Study, we actually are affectionately calling it the BITEM study, the Backyard Integrated Tick Management Study. And we are implementing an integrated approach. So that means we're using more than one approach,
okay,
to manage the tick. And so we are implementing a single springtime application of a pesticide that we know is very effective at killing ticks. It's a targeted application, so we apply it where the lawn meets woods into the woods, and around risky ornamentals such as ground cover like pachysandra.
Yes,
that may be really nice habitat for ticks. And so we're not spraying the entire yard. We do a targeted application. And in addition to that spray application, we are installing these rodent-targeted tick control devices. That's the bait box that you just mentioned. And so there are homes enrolled in the study in western Connecticut and also in southern Rhode Island. And these homes are going to be treated either singly or as a treated cluster, meaning more than one house in a row that are next door to one another,
okay,
so that we can see not only if this integrated approach of using two methods of controlling the ticks works, but also if applying it at a larger scale at adjacent households will actually do a better job at reducing the ticks and reducing the number of ticks that carry the Lyme bacteria, because, you know, by targeting multiple houses, we can actually look at, you know, we can address the issue of, you know, rodents that carry the Lyme bacteria, small mammals like mice. They run, you know, they don't stop at the backyard border and
no.
say, okay, we're not going next door. So we can treat more animals if we apply these bait boxes.
And they go in the bait boxes and they get a brush or something brushes against them and applies an insecticide to them. Is that what happens?
So, yes. So this treats mice and chipmunks, and they run into the box to feed on a bait. And in doing so, they encounter a wick that's treated with a chemical.
Okay.
Yeah, that's treated with fipronil. So fipronil is the same chemical agent that's used in the pet treatment frontline.
Yes.
For flea and tick control. Yes, of course they get the mice get a much lower concentration when they get treated in the box.
Then. Yep.
And so they're placed 10 meters apart, these boxes, in the wooded area at the edge of the property. And we aim to kill the immature ticks on the rodents. And since the rodents are carrying the bacteria that causes Lyme, it not only reduces the number of ticks, but it actually reduces the number of ticks that are carrying that infection.
And I think that's an important point. I mean, so many people forget and always seem surprised when I remind people when talking to them, like people come to visit the garden and so forth, and we're talking about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
The ticks are born without this disease.
Correct.
Or these pathogens or whatever. They are infected by taking a blood meal off frequently a small mammal, a mouse, a chipmunk.
Yes, occasionally birds. Yeah, there's many.
Bird,
yes,
right.
Yep.
So so that's they become then like a messenger, a vector, a transmitter, but they weren't the originator. So just
they,
so people
correct.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. So these organisms that cause disease are circulating in wildlife.
Yeah.
And the tick takes it from the wildlife and then bites a human and transmits that infection.
So I noticed also that you are so that's the backyard integrated tick management Bitem. Did you really tell me that's the name?
It's called the Bitem, the BITM. Yeah, yes, we also have, we're proposing an itchy study, but that's for another phone call.
You and your acronyms,
I
Nita.
Well.
I don't know. I guess you have to have a sense of humor when you go after such insidious creatures.
I hope
so. I also noticed that you're, and that goes through 2020, the research is a four-year
Yes, we study. Just started. Yeah. We did our first year, which was, you know, we collected ticks for baseline information, and we just put out the first bait boxes this fall. Yep.
And I see that you also either are doing or have done a sort of a children's program called Spray Safe, Play Safe. Is that something that you can tell us briefly about?
Absolutely. Actually, so this is a new initiative that we are just beginning now, thanks to a Healthy Communities grant from the Environmental Protection Agency. And this is really a program that we are conducting in collaboration with some community public health partners. And the purpose is to educate families with young children about safe and effective use of pesticides in the backyard because this is for a few reasons. One is that, you know, children under the age of 10 are at the highest risk for acquiring tick-borne illness like Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot, I think, of misunderstanding amongst the public, the general public, about whether to use a pesticide, and if they decide to use a pesticide, what they should use, what they should choose, and how they should apply it. And so there's really two ways it could go wrong. One is that people may over-apply. They may spray something that can have, you know, toxic environmental effects, and they may apply it all over their whole entire lawn and apply it multiple times and may apply it near water, which would not be a very good idea. And so we actually could, you know, be putting themselves or the environment in sort of a deleterious situation. And so the flip side of that is that people may select a product or something they think is effective for killing ticks that maybe is not very effective or needs to be applied more often. And so getting this sort of false sense of security by spraying something that may be ineffective or less effective, and so then they're actually putting themselves at higher risk for disease. So we're trying to, you know, we're trying to create some awareness for families to really empower them to decide if they choose to use a pesticide for backyard tick management. You know, how are they going to choose it? What are they going to choose? How are they going to apply it? And what makes the most sense for them? So we really are, this is our new initiative, and we're really looking forward to seeing how this goes in the next year.
The other thing that's a new-ish choice, not brand new, but new-ish choice, and more garden professional gardener friends of mine are trying it, using it, and I don't know, but is the clothing that's been impregnated, is it with permethrin?
Yeah.
And you know, it's like that's another thing, and it's like, how does one really know as a consumer, is this the way to go?
Okay. So we actually have been doing quite a bit of work over the last 2 years with permethrin-treated clothing, and so just so your audience may
Give
understand
me the
how this
low
works.
Down.
Yeah. So the way that this works is you can have your clothes treated professionally, or you can treat your clothes yourself, or you can buy clothes that have been treated with a chemical that is known as permethrin. This chemical is known to repel ticks from clothing, but also can kill ticks that are exposed to the chemical or to the clothing that's been treated. And the nice thing about permethrin-treated clothing is that it can last on the clothing through several launderings. Mm-hmm. And so if you have treated clothing, you could say, these are my gardening clothes, or I'm going to wear these when I go out to do yard work or clear brush. And so you're adding this extra layer of protection, but you don't need to spray it all over every time you go out. And so the way that it works, if you want to apply it yourself, you can buy this product. There's many brand names at like your local camping store, or sometimes hardware stores have it, and you can apply it. You have to read the package directions. You have to let it dry. And usually that's good for about 4 to 6 washings. But there is a company who will treat your clothes for you. You can actually send your clothes off. So if you have clothes mm-hmm. you really like, you can send that off to the company, and they will actually impregnate your clothing. So they have a process they do this. And that treatment is supposed to be good for 70 washings, or and they
wow.
say that's about the lifetime of the garment. And actually, that's what all of our U.S. military uniforms are treated in this manner by this company, and so they are all wearing these.
So one thing about that substance, permethrin, is one does not put that on one's skin directly.
Absolutely.
Speaking of safety and
yes.
what's the right thing, that is not for skin.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, that is that's reminds me of a friend, her son, who, was trying to repel ticks. He's living, in a place where he spends a lot of time outside. He bought a tick, like a package. It was like a 3-pack of tick repellent, and one of the things in it was this permethrin spray for clothing. But he didn't read the directions, and he actually sprayed it all over him, and it was wet, and it went out, and he ended up, in the hospital. He had a skin reaction. So absolutely, you have to be very careful. You always, when you're working with any sort of chemical, these are EPA registered and approved for use, and they're safe, but you have to really be sensible about what you're going to do in terms of, application, wearing. You certainly don't want to put a treated wet thing on you. You want to wait until the application is dried and use it properly. But it is for clothing. And then, skin repellents is that's a whole different topic.
Yes. So I want to talk about, a lot of people think, okay, the garden season is over, so I'm safe now and so forth. And I was really, you mentioned your colleague at University of Rhode Island, Dr. Tom Mather,
mm-hmm.
and he has that website, tickencounter.org.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. And for people who are in wherever in the country, you can go there, and I'll give the link with the transcript, of course. You can go to tickencounter.org, and you can go region by region, and you can see what tick species are active at any given time period. If it's the end of November, it'll show the last 2 weeks or whatever of tick activity in each region for each species, and really keep you aware of what's going on in your
absolutely.
Area. And that is so mm-hmm. important, because guess what? They are not asleep right now. So vigilance, in the Northeast, for instance, where we typically have a winter, but who knows anymore. Do you think there's a season where there's not a lot of tick activity?
No.
It's all the time.
If you live, particularly here in the Northeast, if you go outside, you're potentially at risk for a tick bite, and so people should always be vigilant. But I think a common misconception, as you pointed out, is that it's winter or the weather's getting cold, and so I'm not at risk for a tick bite. And particularly with the Lyme tick, you know, the black-legged tick, we've really been very good at hammering home that, you know, you should be very careful in the late spring and early summer when the nymphal stage of the tick is out. It's very small. It looks like a poppy seed. It's hard to see, and it's active when people are out being active. But so I think people have sort of, you know, ingrained in their head that the tick is very, very tiny, and it's active during the summer. But what, you know, they may not know or they may not remember is that this tick becomes, this nymphal tick stage, this tiny poppy seed size tick, becomes an adult. And this adult stage is active right now. It's active here in our region, you know, throughout the fall. Usually it begins in October, and it will be active until it finds a blood meal. So the female can lay her eggs. And so as long as the temperature is above freezing, really above 40 degrees, we can easily encounter a tick. In fact, yesterday we were doing experiments with ticks. So yesterday was a nice day outside. So I went out and easily, I mean, I only was out for 20 minutes and I came home with a really large number of ticks. So I think that, you know, they're out. If you're spending time outside, it's good to be vigilant. Always do a tick check. You know, a few Christmases ago, I think it was like, you know, it was almost 70 degrees, and we went out for a hike with our family on Christmas Day, and everybody had a tick on them when they came back. So as long as it's above freezing and if the snow isn't covering all the leaf litter, then ticks can come out and they can bite, and they'll be active all the way into the springtime, into April. Yep.
So just in closing, we have like another minute or two, but I just want to ask you, I have a friend who has an allergy to mammal meat, meaning he can't eat red meat, and apparently this is a tick-related thing. You spoke about some of the diseases, the tick-borne diseases, but what is that?
Okay. So this recently was described that the bite from a particular tick species, the Lone Star tick, has been associated with some of the people being bitten in having developing this allergy to particularly red meat, and also to pork, and even sometimes to poultry, but typically to red meat and pork. And it's because this Lone Star tick actually has, in its gut, it has this particular sugar. It's called alpha-gal, is the short version of that sugar. And when it bites, it transmits this and actually causes the human body and some people to sort of have this allergic response or an alert and develop antibodies to this sugar. And now a lot of meat sources have this alpha-gal sugar as well. And so after being bitten by the tick, you may become sensitized.
Wow.
And then when you eat the meat, you may have what can be often a very severe reaction that can land some people in the hospital. But some people may just have, you know, some indigestion kind of gastrointestinal symptoms, but other people will have hives and swelling, in some cases people have gone to the ICU. And so they only recently have made the connection between this particular species of tick, and in Europe there's other species of ticks they've tried to link this to. And I think, you know, there's other reasons people can develop an allergy to meat, not just the tick bite, but this one definitely was an interesting one, and it's another thing to think about. And this tick species, the Lone Star tick, it's not quite established very well here in the Northeast yet, although we do occasionally see these ticks when we're out sampling, and they're not far from where we're located. But these ticks are very aggressive. They're very aggressive biters. They actually will detect you and sort of chase you and find you, whereas,
now
you know,
you're
the
giving
tick
me nightmares.
I'm sorry. Well, the tick we study, the deer tick, you know, it sort of hangs out on the vegetation just waiting for us to walk by. But these Lone Star ticks, if we they're very aggressive. It makes picnicking hard in some other places.
Well, thank you so much. It's so much to learn, and we look forward to hearing more and more and more as you learn it with your research. I really do appreciate your taking the time to talk to us today, Dr. Nita Connolly of Western Connecticut State University. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, made possible from Timber Press, the leader in fine garden books. The World of Laura Ingalls Wilder by bestselling author Marta McDowell. The revealing exploration of Wilder's connection to the landscapes of the American frontier is a must-read for Little House on the Prairie fans. From booksellers everywhere. From High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/A Way to Garden.
Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.